and June 1st from 9 to 5 at Newton City Hall Green in Newton, Massachusetts. And it's going to be a really awesome event. We're going to have live music, international art, and we would love to see everyone come.
I mean, obviously, visit our website, which is mingagroup.org, M-I-N-G-A group.org.
And consider starting a Minga group at our university, for example.
Yeah,
or other schools.
For example.
For example. Well, thank you so much, Taryn, Katie, and Sarah, for being with us here on Stereo.
Thank you.
Well, thank you so much.
And if now we could have the announcement music, please.
The announcement music is coming your way. And I'd just like to say thank you once again. You are an inspiration, really.
Indeed. So it's time for the Stereo announcements. And we should probably turn that announcement music down just a tad. I know you love it, Amy.
I was just, you know, trying to get you in the mood there, Kendra.
Why, thank you. So this didn't make it into our news stories today, but the organization Committee in Solidarity with the People of El Salvador has received letters and things from the Department of Justice asking them to register as foreign agents under the Foreign Agent Registration Act, claiming that they have been paid by the leftist political party, the FMLN, I can't say that word in English, FMLN, that they have been paid by that party to do public relations and fundraising support for their elections in the United States, and therefore they must register as foreign agents. So CISPIS is holding a demonstration tomorrow at 1 p.m. in front of the JFK Federal Building, which is at New York Government Center T-Stop at New Sudbury and Cambridge Street in Boston. And so that is to denounce the Department of Justice's politically motivated harassment against them. Our next announcement is also for tomorrow, Saturday. This is from 9 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. for in Jamaica Plain. It's the JP Neighborhood Summit on Building an Equitable Community, How to Keep JP Inclusive, Safe, and Vibrant. So that's open to everyone. There's childcare, Spanish interpretation, and transportation provided. Again, 9 a.m. to 3:30 p.m. at English High School, which is on McBride Street in Jamaica Plain. And then another announcement for Saturday. This one in the night, 8 p.m. to 10 p.m., there's a benefit for Host Selling's International Cultural Kitchen Program, which is an after-school program for inner-city youth that promotes intercultural understanding through cooking and peer education. So this benefit features Umoja Orchestra, which is a Florida favorite, and it's their Boston debut, as well as live music, food, drinks, and dancing, silent auction. You can find out more and get tickets by calling 617-718-7990, extension 17. Again, that's Saturday, 8 to 10 p.m., a benefit, and it's in at the Harriet Tubman House Atrium, South End. And that's all the time we have, but Amy might have something she wants to say.
Oh, you know, leave it to me to just steal the time from Music for Human Beings. I just wanted to add another event that's happening actually in Somerville, that the fantastic movie Like Water for Chocolate is being shown on Tuesday night. That's May 20th. It's going to be shown for free at the Somerville Public Library at 79 Highland Avenue. And that is accessible from Leechmere on the bus from Leechmere. Like Water for Chocolate, a wonderful Mexican love story with subtitles for those who don't understand the Spanish. Y eso me hace pensar que ni hablamos en español casi nunca hoy. Pero seguro que cuando quieren saber más de Esferio, siempre lo pueden buscar por el internet y prometemos que quizás la próxima vez vamos a conversar un poquito más en español también. Muchísimas gracias a las chicas de Minga.
And we'd like to remind you that the views and opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of WMBR, the Technology Broadcasting Corporation, or MIT. This is WMBR Cambridge. Stay tuned for Music for Human Beings.
llevo en un tour. Más drama lirical directamente desde el sur.
Las tierras del terror, detrás de las cortinas internacionales donde ocultan las mentiras.
Políticos de mierda que gobiernan el país. Ahora la sangre corre por los campos de maíz. Noticieros manipulados, ¿qué tal si supieran? Tal vez no votarían por estas gonorreas.
Pero no se olvide, la lucha está en pie.
Y mi arma es mi voz y yo nunca pierdo.
Anderton and Music for Human Beings tonight, here with you. That's WMBR in Cambridge, 88.1 FM. Welcome to the program. We have six nodal points approximating the circle, all here with us. And do we have Dr. Jollis there connected up?
Marhaban Sayyidi Beam.
Okay, Dr. Jollis, welcome. Yeah, Dr. Jollis is over in B control, and he's not quite through the plexiglass, but 2 degrees of plexiglass away, and he's right there. And it's just interesting because we're all here in the studio, and we toss the call-in number out. But, you know, even Dr. Jollis, you know, one of our guests, we can't see him. He's here with us, and he exists. So if you'd like to join in also, we have two channels open, two channels in the telco phone system. And the number is 617-253-8810. Dr. Jollis, maybe you could just set our coordinates and just get us going tonight.
Well, Mr. Beam, I recall today, as I am walking to the station here, my interaction with the great god of Thebes, Amun. Well, I'm not sure if you have interacted with him, but he is sometimes represented as a man with the head of a ram, or occasionally as a ram itself. Beam, have you ever interacted with a ram?
I was in New Zealand one time, and no, I'm sorry, that was a goat. Yeah, I just remembered the way its eyes looked, and you know, kind of that rectangular, very spiritual shape, and
it is a spiritual being.
Yeah, it's definitely a goat.
The ram, I recall when I was a young boy in the Hijaz, the first sort of herd of sheep, and I was only just experiencing pubescence at the time, and I walked into the herd and was immediately knocked down by a ram. And you know, as a burgeoning soul, I was growing in many ways. I was, shall we say, perhaps prideful.
And okay, ram, but I'm just curious how this connects in with puberty, just how that was there at the moment.
Well,
it was just circumstance. It was happening then and there.
May I say, the ewes were ignoring me, but the ram recognized me as a male.
I see, and charged you like a rhino.
Knocked me down.
Yeah.
And I stood, and the ram knocked me again.
Harsh.
Thrice I was knocked by the ram to the floor until my friend the shepherd arrived to rescue me. In a remarkably simple way, the shepherd friend, he sort of tapped the ram on the side, and the ram immediately backed off. As if to say, I mean, my belief on the issue is that the ram has evolved that whoever, you know, hits the other ram the hardest is right. The master ram. And of course my friend the shepherd hits the ram softly, but the ram did not hit him at all.
I just think it's so interesting how puberty means so many different things, because when I think of puberty, I never put much into it. You know, if you were to ask me a couple of years ago, puberty for me was 6th, 7th grade health videos you watch in class, you know, the voice changes, and they tell you all about that, and you know, and guys and girls all watch the same movies, and you hear what the girls who are becoming women are worried about, and same for the boys.
Is it the same for the rams too?
Well, and also just that it's, you know, part of it's a different culture, but just that it's such a different expression of what puberty means, and just such a beautiful kind of experiential raw, you know. Yeah, that's an interesting thing to just kind of rethink puberty.
Well, and ultimately this is this, you know, as time drew, I realized that this ram was probably the incarnate of Amun. Lately I visited a temple within the secret depths of this temple, the primary statue of Amun was preserved. And the ignorant have written that Amun dwelt within the statue, but this is false. The statue was host only. And Amun later visited me in dreams.
People are picking up on a lunar irregularity in these statues.
Indeed.
Well, let's go ahead and bring the Colonel into this. And also tonight we have Jenny on the show. Jenny, welcome. And do we have Jenny? Is that working?
Yeah.
Okay, great. You know, physical microphones are hard to hook up sometimes.
And also, Brother Beam, I have in B-Control our brother, Peace Child Peter.
Okay, Peace Child Peter, welcome to the program.
Hey, what's up, man?
So let me just count for a minute here. That's six nodal points approximating the circle here. And that's before we even have any callers. I think that's that might be a new record on Music for Human Beings. That's just really unbelievable.
It's a new age for a new age.
Yeah. Well, Colonel, tell us a little bit about what you've been reading lately.
I guess Jenny and I recently have delved into, a little bit of the modern world.
And I should say, Colonel and
right,
Jenny here.
So let me give a little background.
Ordained light ministers together, and they work this into their practice. Yeah.
Do you want to tell the story, Jenny?
No, please, Colonel. Go ahead.
Well, I guess it was about 15 years ago or so. Thanks.
I gotta say, that was annoying. Man. Sometimes these New Age records, you pull a dud. Sorry, go ahead.
I think about 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm. 22.
15? 20?
22.
22. Sailboat was sailing through the Mediterranean. We were actually trying to find Lester. Is he with us tonight anywhere? Can he hear us?
Lester's coordinates. Lester's actually...
Has anyone located himself?
Lester sent an email out, and we were going to broadcast that through the medium, but...
Oh, yeah?
Well, but our computer here in studio is not... Oh, it is working. Okay. Yeah, go ahead, and I'll see if we can get the latest from Lester pulled
up. Lester's always hard to track down.
He's ephemeral.
He's out there, though.
He's out there. So sailboat, we were going to meet up with Lester, I think, somewhere in Egypt. That's where he was studying at that time. And, we were concentrating, primarily on reality overload. So, kind of the assault of modern day, society on imagination. And how that kind of decreases, connections.
It's just such a synchronicity that it's there in the Mediterranean.
Right. So we went there because of the lack of reality, actually. That's where a lot of people choose to study these things. You don't have much outside influence. Mm-hmm. Sandstorms, dunes. But it goes deeper than that. I don't know if you want to touch on that, Jenny.
Well, I just remember that 22 years ago feeling so overwhelmed. And finding that peace in the desert.
I think there's something to be said for a lack of cactuses in a desert.
Mm-hmm.
He was so serene with you there, Lester.
Let me just,
If anyone else wants to comment on the lack of cactuses... in the Egyptian desert. I find that really interesting.
Yeah, I'm just going to go ahead and fade that one down. Okay, sorry, go ahead.
I don't know, do you have any input on that, Arthur?
Actually, let's just go ahead and tie Lester in here. He sent these words out last week and we just barely missed it, but here's... Actually, first of all, just put a caller on the queue here. Yeah, caller, are you with us? You're on the air. Caller, can you hear us? You're on the program.
Hello?
Yeah, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hi.
Thank you so much for putting me on the show.
Oh, yeah, anytime.
Thanks.
Yeah,
thanks for being with us.
It's an open forum. That's what we're here for.
I wanted to talk about the desert.
Oh.
The desert in Egypt.
Okay.
Illumination.
What?
I was just saying it'd be illumination on the subject would be wonderful.
I don't think I can give illumination, but I do think
maybe a candle light.
I do think it's a very beautiful place, the Egyptian desert.
Yeah, a whole lot of sand and just the way the textures that they carve out in the wind.
Hello. Like, yeah?
Is it the lack of cacti? That can make it
maybe it's the lapping of the sand.
Maybe the cacti would disturb the natural wave formation.
Did you feel the sand? Have you been there, caller? Caller?
Okay, it looks like we lost that call. That's a drag, but that's okay.
That was 7.
Well, here's what we got coming here from Lester. Yeah, so Lester just wanted to pass on a message. He was just saying that the cardamom and rich gulab jamun had been showing pretty strong colors of blue and orange, iridescent light, when exposed to precious gas stones, leveraging the excess storage capacity of wheat fields and dry deltas when used sparingly. And he just went on to say that he plans to continue purifying this compound for use as an extract to be applied topically or intravenously as a balm or a psalm, perhaps, for people suffering from depression, eczema, gout, oil leakages, and heart fatigue. Okay, and he just says that it's unknown when we can take it to market at this early stage, but that FDA studies look promising. Oh, so that's really cool. That's just a discovery he's made that you know, is in confluence with Western medicine. But he says, please send my wishes and shanti and holy to our listeners. He's transgressed the steps of an ancient grazing grounds that is known for its tonic water. And he'd like to begin a question-answer session based around precious resources of water and soil. Now these compare for usage as a meditation grounds. Yep, and that's Lester. Okay, that's the latest.
For our new listeners, could you remind us who this Lester character is?
Yeah, Lester Woods, also an ordained light minister. Lester was with us for about a year before he took off on a spirit quest. I think that about sums up Lester. But he'll be back on the program in maybe even a month or something like that. Yeah.
Very good. If I get eczema in this month, then I'll be very happy that he's coming back.
Yeah, I don't know what a gas stone is. I never heard of that, precious gas stones, but maybe we'll hear more from that later. Well, we do have two channels open, and that number is 617-253-8810.
I liked your creative reading of Lester's intravenously. It's pretty.
Yeah, no.
I felt it.
Okay,
I felt it.
So Scrabble, those words are different.
Well, you pronounced it perhaps like a Thai Scrabble player would.
It's pronounced
it like you had no idea what the word meant.
No, I've always pronounced it that way. So it's pronounced intravenously.
I guess if you just take venously and then add intra.
Intravenously.
Maybe a little bit better.
Wow, I always thought it was intravenously.
But it shows that you've divorced the meaning from the.
No, exactly. I know precisely what it means. It's, you know, you're smacking your arm and. yeah, medicine, drug, whatever.
About power stone.
Intravenously, yeah.
Could we? What happens to a power stone when it has become sand? Maybe the Egyptian deserts are more. Maybe their origin is more power stone than.
Yeah, maybe they're testament to that. Yeah.
I want to visit.
I guess we should ask our resident desert expert, Dr. Dallas.
Well, I am not familiar with power stone. I do recall in my visits to, this area under the Greater Bear, we called the place what we called gas stones.
Mm-hmm.
The gas stones, they are in color a dull purple, similar to the color of bruised flesh. They dwell in caverns, these gas stones. And we call them gas stones because they are very, very hot. They're very warm to the touch.
Mm-hmm.
But they receive their heat from fissures that emit sulfurous plumes of gas.
Oh, sorry, from fissures?
Fissures in the cave.
Fissures.
Fissures.
I think fissures with a U.
Okay, I was thinking like a fissure, right, like in the fissure. Weasel family.
Ah, okay, no. No, like crack.
Cleave.
Got it.
And the gas stone, it gives its life power to lichen, growing and glowing on the walls, which offer faint crimson illumination.
Okay, I can kind of see where if you take this a few steps forward, you know, just to keep taking it, you could start to produce deserts and just that more kind of uniform spread of energy.
Well, none of us know where the desert came from. We from the desert refer to it as the repository of hidden things. In the great places, we call them the empty space.
Let's get a caller in on this. Caller, are you with us?
Yeah, hi. Talking about the desert, I mean, it reminds me of my childhood.
Okay.
It's I think one of the things that really should attract your attention that the desert night. It's
kind of
something special.
Kind of the inverse of the desert day.
I agree. Yeah. Well, because...
And when the temperature goes down and you lay down on your bed outside, of course, there is nothing between you and the sky.
Mm-hmm.
And then all the law that you learn about gravity will become, as a result, it's upside down, as if the sky is pulling you more than the earth.
Well, Peace Child Peter, I know you spent a lot of time in the, what is that desert in California? It's the,
Mojave?
Mojave, yeah. I was thinking Gobi, but that's totally wrong.
That's...
Very wrong, yeah.
Very wrong, yeah.
So it reduces your stress level. It relaxes your body because there is nothing between you and the sky. You just look at the stars and as if they have more gravity than the earth below you.
Mm.
So it's... it's something that I think people who live in the city might never experience.
Hmm.
The way you describe it almost sounds a little bit to me like how you can see a forest cast off in a really still lake, just how it's very mirror-like. It almost sounds like the desert is mirroring the stars above.
Uh-huh. It's very, and that's what happened to the people. That's why the people from the desert learn a lot or give us a lot of information about the sky and the how they group the stars and make all kind of stories about them. So it's a very nice are very good, powerful therapy for people with stress. That's why the people in the desert more relaxed than us here in the city.
Yeah, I can give testament to that. People in the city tend to be pretty pretty stuck, I think is a good word. Kind of, you know, stuck on a thought, uptight, can't really flow.
Yeah, exactly. But that's one thing I like to share with you about the desert.
Arthur,
thank you.
Thanks. Oh, caller, thanks so much for joining us on the program tonight. Yeah. Molly Ponte.
When you're talking about not being able to flow within a city,
yeah,
I'm wondering how, when Jenny and I were in the desert, we noticed the same thing.
You couldn't flow so well in the desert.
Well, it got hard at times because there's few things to sink to. There's no ground. I mean, it's sort of like floating in space. I mean, you're in such an open environment, and you don't know. As she said, the stars start weighing more than the ground.
And you're not really standing still. You're kind of sinking every step, right?
Right. Yeah. And the ground's shifting around you at all the time. So it's kind of ambiguous. And I think flowing there requires a lot more potential.
Well, hence, I believe our term for these areas in the desert, the empty space.
Oh.
Al-Farigh.
Okay.
And a great problem. There was a period in our history where he who had committed a great crime would be cast out to die a horrible death seeking water from this empty space.
Right.
And few have survived.
Okay, so that sounds a little bit like too much of a mind expansion.
An overexpansion.
You know, too much of a journey. You can't get back.
Those who have survived, I am told, have done so by embracing this emptiness.
Yeah, embracing a lack of water. Can you explain how?
You know, Socrates would say that this is a beneficial thing because we are all just prisoners of our bodies when you think about it. The mind can do so much more without the encumbrance of the body, the cage, as it were, that it is forced to reside in. Maybe those that didn't come back from the desert had a little something. They knew a little something that the rest of us didn't, you know, man?
Some kind of recipe, you know, start all together in the pot.
Well, also,
some recipe for life, yeah.
It may not be clear how embracing your fear would guard you from dying of thirst. But you realize that in order to survive, you must seek the deepest depths beneath the rocks, in the low places of the land. And there is moisture there, too attenuated to serve the need of life directly. But it may be had by sucking the juice of crawling things that concentrate the dampness between their shells.
Okay, now, that sounds a little bit rougher than, you know, I know in Mexico, some of those blue agave cactuses, you can just kind of harvest their righteousness, just drink that
just
juice.
Pop a straw in.
Well, as as my master colonel has pointed out, in the empty space, there is no friendly cactus with glorious nectar. You must suck the juice of the bug.
That's okay. Just the way you gotta survive sometimes, man, you know? Haven't you ever been in your kitchen and just no more soda left, no more tea, no more water? You gotta find something. And that's when you gotta go to Trader Joe's or something and get some beer. You know what I'm saying, man?
Yeah, I've definitely been there. It just sucks when you wake up on Wednesday morning and all you got are condiments.
Yeah, I gotta have beer on Wednesday, man.
Well, you know, I don't think this is quite too much, you know, just the desert that you can starve to death, that you can be thirsty, or that, you know, in a city that's not the problem so much, but you can get constricted. I guess it's not so much the journey I was getting at. You know, my journey began as a child, kind of an imagination journey. You know, my imagination could run freely and just, you know, grab the fabric of everyday life and, you know, not really a physical journey. I'm just laying in my room and just vastness of colors and light and being carried away to an enchanted world.
You know, I think that a big part of the initiation of a young man or woman comes in part a physical journey, sort of a realization, a coming to terms with the world and nature. For instance, the good doctor here, when he mentioned his ram story, it reminded me when I was very young. Back in the 50s, I happened to live on a farm with my uncle.
Mm.
And he had this goat. And much like the doctor, the goat would knock me down because it would sense a threat. It would sense I was a male. And he wouldn't do this until I started to come of age and
sort of knock down back, right?
Yeah. But I couldn't because this goat was much stronger than I.
Even when you were fully grown?
Well, I wasn't yet. But one day I decided that I needed to tell that goat that he cannot knock me down anymore, so I went into the shed, you know, and took out a hammer. And the next time the goat came up to me, I gave him a good whack between the eyes. And at first I was scared because the goat dropped right away and I thought I had killed it. And I was very sad, but it turns out I just knocked him out. But afterward, after he had his rest for 2 or 3 hours, he got up and he never bothered me again. So my point is, that day I learned nature. When I tell people this story, sometimes their reaction is, well, the animal is just following its instincts. It didn't know any better. It was doing what came naturally.
Yeah, and you changed those instincts.
I did. I gave it a lesson that it did not forget. And this is how sometimes you gotta come to terms with the world.
I guess I'm just glad you didn't use the wrong end of the hammer.
Yeah, well, I was only 12 or so at the time.
Yeah, that's what's one of the most beautiful puberty stories I've ever heard.
It's a just nice coming-of-age story,
it's,
yeah.
It's a beautiful age to come into.
It's just weird that both of them involved rams or goats.
Well, we something ate the about goat this, later. Something about I don't this. Know if that's relevant.
Okay.
I picked up on that pattern. Yeah, as the lone female here.
Mm.
Men, I really sense this power struggle that you've all had with these four-legged creatures. And as a woman, my experience with puberty, it was so different. I really can't associate it or relate it to an animal. I really think it was more of a plant or a
vegetable.
Or a flower.
Yeah. Let's talk about it.
Flower?
It wasn't so much woman versus beast.
No.
What, if I may, Jenny, have you spent any significant amount of time near these mindless vessels?
You know, I can't say I have.
Because my relatives, female, have had, of course, an analogous experience with the ewes.
Really? It's, tell us more.
Indeed. Well,
ewes? Animals or trees? Sorry.
No, the female of the sheep.
Okay. Because there are ewe trees.
Mm. Of this I am not aware. Well, similar to me, when a young woman walks in the herd of sheep, the ewes will protect the ram. They will guard jealously the male of the species and attack the female of our species.
I'm pretty sure it's the other way around.
I assure you, I have lived with the sheep.
I'll accept that.
Okay, yeah, let's get back to Jenny's experiences and we'll just connect that together. We'll figure out, you know, what the disconnect is here. But Jenny, what kind of plants are you thinking about, you know?
Well, really any plant that blooms or...
Like a ficus.
Good ficus.
Perennials.
No, not a ficus.
Okay, maybe a rhododendron. Big bloom every year.
A bloom. Really, I want to emphasize that the opening up of the petals and the reaching of the harmony with the new air.
Kind of like a yucca plant.
Or a certain fungus.
Fungus.
A pus-colored fungus green.
Yeah, because you are growing and you're feasting on the world as you become a woman, and it's really ongoing, and it just expands like fungus.
Right. We have a saying in my people that the living may not instruct a woman, but the dead may. Similar to a fungus.
Mm. Okay. That's not. I mean, I wouldn't think of a fungus analogy so much, because to me, what a fungus symbolizes, where's the real organism? It's this complex interconnection underground. And the fungus really, the fruiting body, it represents kind of this releasing of the spores. And that is its beginning and its end. It opens up and the spores drop all over the world.
But maybe that is related. I mean, the fungus is always there. The bacteria is always there, just like your puberty and your experience that you had, Jenny. It was there. It was there. You've had that your whole life, and only until you reach that point, that super saturated point, could you actually experience that, just like the fungus. Until they've totally colonized that substrate.
So there is.
They
this.
Can't actually come out into their full form.
Yeah.
So maybe it's an awakening. Maybe
it's like you've digested a big enough fraction of the tree where you can grow fruiting bodies and open up.
I mean, maybe this is ambiguous. Maybe you...
No, I do think you have something there. Now that you're relating it to fungus, I'm just looking back, a whole different perspective. I'm really thinking I'm still going through all of this now, even as a developed woman, that it's still very much here with me, and it continues.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it will continue, just like fungus can continue flourishing until all the nutrients have been used up.
Yes.
I think we refer to that as menopause in modern society.
Okay, well, I'm just thinking, fungus, you have an agar substrate, and eventually those nutrients are gone.
Right.
Yeah.
You've used up all your estrogen.
It's beautiful.
Yes. All living creatures are embodiments of hunger. Man is a hollow tube, ingesting food at one end of the tube and excreting waste at the other. And hence, man, like the empty space, is empty.
But it's even more than empty, though, right? Because what's coming in is not the same as what's coming out. Dr. Jollis?
Well, I agree, but the hollow tube remains hollow and empty. The natural condition of the mind is emptiness. All efforts to fill this emptiness are temporary. Temporary diversions that fail to deny the truth.
I don't know. I guess I'm just thinking too physically. I'm thinking, the human body is not empty. It has digestive enzymes.
But Dr. Jollis, what is the truth that we should be filled with?
Emptiness.
So you're saying the truth is emptiness?
Yeah, it is our... It is a fundamental truth of our existence and the existence of every creature. Emptiness is our initial state and the resting state.
I think you're in an infinite loop here. I don't think you want to be in that state.
Ah, we all die. No loop in life is infinite.
An empty space that dies.
Right, but always suggesting that you're always empty is infinite.
No, your goal should be to purge yourself. Purge your mind with terror, purge the body with pain and hunger.
Sorry, purge your body of terror or purge your body with terror?
With pain and hunger. This is the lessons that we learn by losing ourselves in these empty spaces.
Yeah, I agree with that. But I just think classifying it as empty might be overboard.
I don't know, I still, you know, it has digestive enzymes. You can't deny that.
Well, I don't disagree that we digest what we consume, that we transform it, but the tube, it remains a tube. And any attempt to fill yourself is mindless and futile.
Okay, I see this now. So you're saying it's a constant cycle. You can never actually become filled.
You are never filled.
Right.
But in your despair, there is a void that yearns to be filled.
So maybe you are satiated in some way, right?
Only temporarily. You must seek for emptiness itself and satisfy yourself with emptiness.
At best, we can only get some kind of pus-like substance.
Like the fungus.
Well, that number is 617-253-8810, and we would really just love to have you on here on the program. So go ahead and give us a call up. Yeah, and we're listening to The Journey. It's an Anna Shad piece, and I just pulled it because it was so appropriate for tonight. Yeah, and the track is Gratitude. Coming up next, Fairy Song.
No, this music reminds me of the first time I went into the iPod store.
Yeah, PCP, go on.
It was a terrible experience. The floor was wet at the time, but I neglected to notice the signs, the yellow signs, and so I slipped and I fell, and all I remember was that this music was playing at the time, and when I woke up, I was in a jail cell, and I didn't know why, and they had told me that somehow the fumes from the cleaning fluid on the floor had gotten into my bloodstream because I was... I pretty much face-planted in that stuff, you know what I mean, man?
But yeah. But you were filled. Filled with something.
With empty. Fumes.
It kind of percolated down your consciousness.
And then the jail cell was filled with me, so I think it was kind of lose-lose, if you know what I mean.
Yeah. Yikes. I never thought of the Apple Store as, like, having that possibility, you know? That's just really...
Just be careful in the iPod store, man.
Do you remember why you were in jail?
Well,
Or how you got there?
Yeah, I mean, what was your offense? They're not gonna come down on you for cleaning fluids.
Yeah, I forgot that one, I guess. It was a long day, so... Something about... My blood or something. I don't know.
Some action triggered by the blood.
Still fuzzy?
Yeah, man.
You're dancing in your blood.
I mean, and it was about 30 years ago, so...
That must have been the first iPod, then.
Well, I recall this iPod. It had a... It was quite large. The first portable... With records.
Yeah, it was actually a backpack that you had to wear. Had a big, a little plug in the back.
Well, yes, and it was powered by pump.
Or it also came with a hand crank, foot pedal sort of deal. Some people, they got it to hang attached to their bikes so that while they were moving they were charging it up.
You know, I used to have one of those that you pedal and it turns on a light, and that was really hard to produce those watts.
You can imagine how hard this thing was, you know.
45 children on a large bike.
Well, but I only did 30.
You were pumping something good, something worth playing though.
Yeah, it wasn't this song though.
Okay, well this song is... Raven's Flight, and it's another one off Journey.
Yeah.
It's got nothing on the fairy song. I really like nothing more than fairyism. I wonder if fairies are somehow filled with things that we are not. Like truth.
I don't think so.
No. You know, speaking of truth, the reason that I came a little late today to the show, I know we like to...
start on time.
We like to start on time, and we like to all arrive an hour early and, mm-hmm. and sit in our circle and meditate together. To,
right. No words, just, yeah.
Yeah.
Breathing.
Well, I mean, I miss that because I happened by a man on the way here on the street, and he had these little blue pieces of paper,
mm-hmm.
which I guess I'll have to show you after the show, Rainbow Beam. The topic is that apparently at MIT today, right now, in fact, and since it's right now, it was quite a struggle to get myself to come, but...
Okay. I guess I'm not getting the big picture, though.
There's this meeting or this convention, and it's about it's entitled 9/11 Blueprint for Truth, and a bunch of really smart MIT engineers are getting together or something, and they're going to analyze and try to get the truth behind MIT here. Behind 9/11.
Here at MIT.
On small blue pieces of paper.
Yeah.
It's a kind of blueprint. I like it.
It's so they're saying that it was somehow set up some way, the whole 9/11 thing, you know, and they were talking like really convincingly, you know, man.
Yeah, no, I've seen those videos. There's Spare Change and there's all those other ones.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, they really. But, you know, I've seen videos like that are about how you can't deny that this person was resurrected, you know, like the person was definitely dead. They measured the blood pressure and then they were like in the corpse room for a while and then they put in the embalming fluid. And it wasn't until then that they came back to life. You can't deny that resurrection
drugs,
happened.
That sort of thing. Trust me on this one.
It's like a closed proof that resurrection happened.
The reptile relation, the power blood, the blood power line.
I haven't heard about that.
Reptiles. Well,
there's
a big theory now. It's actually a lot of people have shared this and voiced it that major world leaders, current world leaders and necessarily past ones,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
are all actually related and come from a reptilian bloodline.
Really? And this is just national leaders of all kinds, or?
It's major power figures in the world. So
okay, so kind of
you've
like
got CEOs, politicians, religious leaders.
Oh, just the leadership type has like a sort of a lizard component.
Uh huh. And there's actually some good proof in it so far.
Hey, you know, I think I heard about this back when I lived in Illinois. This was one of the major topics at the university. I used to live at the university.
Was Dan Peters? Heading it up?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
He was there. We spoke for many hours, and he enjoyed my tea, and he said that he had scientific proof because he cloned Dick Cheney with lizard blood, and it was rather remarkable. It looked just like him. He even shot someone in the face afterward. It was amazing.
Okay, and this is like a computer simulation?
No, it was a little Dick Cheney. He was to quarter scale.
Wow.
It was amazing.
Wow.
That's impressive. I hadn't heard that yet.
Yeah. Well, he did it just for me. He apparently there's something in science where if you have too great a breakthrough, then no one will believe you. So he's slowly introducing it. You'll probably hear about it within the next 10 years or so.
I'd have to see it to believe it. Yeah,
yeah, that's what I said, man.
Right, I don't blame you at all. That's interesting.
Why did he choose Dick Cheney to clone? Can you shed some light on that choice?
You know, I don't really know. It's what he had. It's
Well, I've heard that the cloning operation is simpler on men that are entirely bald with very pointy noses.
No.
Okay, and why is that?
Well, it has something to do with the genetic structure.
Nah, that's baloney.
No, no, I insist it's true. I have spent...
If Dan Peters is listening, I'd like him to call in.
I'm not familiar with the work of Professor Peters, but in the Temple of Azathoth, this is what we discovered.
Did they discover it by cloning a person who looks like Dick Cheney?
Well, not necessarily Mr. Cheney, but with these... I am only arguing that these features lend themselves well.
Is it because they have fewer states? Fewer available states of existence or something like that?
This is a possibility. Somehow...
I mean, they can't have hair, so it's easier. They have one less DNA strand.
It's a great deal fewer than one. Because you must also clone the hairstyle and so forth, and it's simpler if there is no hair to begin with.
About 6 minutes left here to the program, and that's WMBR in Cambridge, 88.1 FM. For those who are tuning in, that's Music for Human Beings, New Age Talk Radio Show, with emphasis on you. We haven't had too many callers here percolating in tonight, but we do still have a couple minutes, so if you'd like to join us, you know, it's an open forum. The number 617-253-8810. Through a journey tonight. We've gone a lot of different places, and we listened to a few tracks off this Journey CD. And, yeah, if anybody wants to wrap us up, I don't quite know where we are.
Well, I'd say today we all learned a couple valuable things. Firstly, we learned that the human is a tube that can never be filled, but can only go through a transitory phase. And since that's the case, you know, you gotta keep happy. You've gotta enjoy your life as best you can. We've also learned that you can't live in the desert because there's no water there.
Unless you dig a very deep well.
Yes, a very deep well.
Well, if you are willing to crunch the bug, you will survive. You remind me all that the race of man was this thought that came to me when I was lost in the empty space, that perhaps we were made, the race, in jest, only by our creators to have a foolish creature to mock and to study for their diversion. And yet later I remember that they did not make us as we now appear. In the beginning, our bodies were bestial and hairy, and we progressed with the aid of our arms.
Although some of us still do.
But the arms, they were longer and more powerful than they are at present.
I believe they could support weight better, too.
Mm. No doubt our creators would find our present forms less amusing and perhaps exterminate us if they were not so weak.
Luckily, we're good.
You know, I'm wondering... Okay, yeah. Yeah, okay, good. I think I just realized that Peace Shell Peter and Dr. Jalas, I don't know if you've been broadcasting this whole time. I haven't been getting you picking up on the needles.
No?
Yeah, Dr. Jalas, try to flip that on-air switch. All set now?
No, I flipped it, and I could not hear myself, and could, I think it's right.
I think our callers have been calling in about the desert, and Dr. Jalas.
Yeah, I think you're right. I just think my needles don't pick up Dr. Jalas's, and that's okay.
Dr. Jalas's, his powers don't go at a different frequency.
Well, the needles are lustful demons.
Yeah, we just have two different oscillators in the studio. That's okay.
It's hard with the walls, too.
Okay, we're going to go ahead and phase out. So we'll be back with you next week. Music for Human Beings. Everybody, thanks for joining us tonight.
Shukran jazeelan ya Sayyidi, bi ma'salama.
Mulibachi.
Peace be with you.
And Jenny, Colonel. Peace, Shell Peter.
Namaste.
Scrabble. Namaste.
Namaste.